LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everybody. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, Reverend Roy of HealingAmulet.com in Nashville, Tennessee, bringing us what's sure to be an engaging discussion on Reiki versus shamanic healing. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, Reverend Roy. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone yet again to the Monday Night Phenomenon that is Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. And yes, it is Monday yet again, that dreaded day of the week for many, but not for all of us, because it's Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics. Take a few moments, jump on over to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page, drop a comment on the Magic Mondays post to win your chance at a free 15-minute reading with a Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. A lot of wonderful readers out there just waiting to answer your burning questions. Again, Magic Mondays, Hoodoo Psychics. Don't miss out. All right, so here we are yet again. Got the chat family filtering in for tonight. Let's jump over back to you, Reverend James. How are things?
Things are things. No, not a lot has changed lately, except for, you know, we're still working on getting some of those new vigil candles onto the various websites, so FolkConjure.com and FolkFaithMinistries.com. Those should be completely up. If not, they should definitely be up by the end of the week. Other than that, you know, those that listen to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour know that we went thrift shopping yesterday with my mother, who came to visit, and we found ourselves a really nice piece of Chinese art, I guess, or Korean art in the form of dolls that are about a foot and a half tall, and the whole thing, and it's got like a stage of black stage with what seems like stage lights on the front, and has a plug-in that's really neat. Didn't know what it did. We plugged it in. We thought it was just going to be, you know, lights light up pretty, but it ended up they started to bow, and they would do that over and over again. It's really neat. Never seen one move like that. So now the problem is it's finding where to put it because we don't have many places.
You know, you've talked about that now 2 days, and everybody's probably going, what does this thing actually look like? I think we're going to need to video a short demo and put it out on Folk Conjure's Facebook page and Instagram just so we can share it with everybody and they can stop going, what the hell is Reverend James talking about? No, really is a cool little animatronic display piece that I've never seen anything quite like it. And great addition to the collection that is becoming this our museum of a house. But you've also been exploring some additional Buddhist empowerments, isn't that true?
Well, they're on the books, but this most recent one that was going into the start of I guess you could say a month of empowerments and teachings, almost missed. So I don't want to say that I'm going to get anything that I might not because of other constraints. We'll see how things go. But I did yesterday work on Uchuzma, which is Dakini Miwa Tsekpa. It's a deity that helps to cleanse and clean impurities and broken samayas, which is broken vows that you've made. So say that a certain commitment comes with an empowerment that says, hey, you got to do this mantra, you know, 108 times a day, and say, you know, you got sick and really didn't feel like doing it, even though you definitely could have, you just didn't feel like it, so you didn't do it. And then, you know, now you've got a broken samaya. So you could then do a chusma practice to cleanse yourself of that broken vow and restore your vow.
That is very cool. And, you know, for those listening and those in the chat, you know, our Monday night family, when possible, Reverend James does share these empowerments and services that he attends on our Facebook pages with folkconjure.com and Folk Faith Ministries. There are very often chances for having ways to sort of to participate yourself in receiving empowerment and receiving energetic blessings as he goes through. So definitely something to, if you're not already following folkconjure.com on Facebook, Instagram, or Folk Faith Ministries on Facebook and Instagram, definitely want to jump on over and hit that like button. But without further ado, it's enough about Reverend James and myself. I am so excited to be able to welcome back to our studio Reverend Roy of HealingAmulet.com in Nashville, Tennessee. So fantastic. It really has been a hot minute since you joined us last, Roy. How are things going? What's new in Nashville?
It is great to be back here. I don't remember exactly the last time I was on, but, you know, things are going really well here. Of course, we're in spring and everything, we're getting color and it's beautiful and lots of allergies.
That's not the beautiful part.
I don't know what it's like up your way tonight. We're under wind advisories here. They're supposed to be having like 60-mile-an-hour winds here in the next couple of hours, so just waiting for that to get here. The store's doing good. I'm doing good. You know, we're just plugging along here.
You know, typically for us, we get the weather that you're getting a day later. It's always been kind of fun because it's like, what's going on in Nashville? Okay, that's what we're going to get hit with tomorrow. So batten down the hatches in Western North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, like we've put down the, you know, the little whatever umbrella over the picnic table, and it's been breezy all afternoon, but it's supposed to get kind of rough here in the next couple of hours. So,
well, for those in the listening area of or in and around Nashville, definitely batten down your hatches as well. Actually, you know, Roy, it's been since November since you
really?
Were with us last. And when we had that outstanding discussion, it was November 13th, Friday the 13th, or Monday the 13th. That's right. Monday the 13th. I read Friday, said Friday, meant Monday. It's been that kind of a day for me today. But when we had that great, it was a great discussion on shamanic journeying. And, you know, that kind of flows into a little bit about our topic for today, you know, talking about shamanic healing. In comparison, you know, contrast between Reiki and other things, but we'll get into that. I have to say that show on shamanic journeying was very, very popular. And if anyone has not listened to that show, definitely want to go back into the archives and pull that one back. So much phenomenal information. That's, you know, in no small part is that why does that not make me excited for tonight? Because I just know, you know, it's going to bring the fire again.
You know, in all honesty, I had intended to go back this past week and listen to that show again, but I never did. So, you know, I may end up repeating myself. I don't know, but I do remember us talking about at the end of the show or after the show talking about, you know, we need to continue that conversation. So here we are.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because this week is actually the 1-year anniversary of the first time you've been on the show. I did happen to notice that this week in March last year, you were actually our third guest, and it's hard to believe we're heading towards our 50th show.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you. You know, fantastic support from, you know, yourself and so many of the wonderful guests that have come on, the outstanding folks that are in the chat who definitely have some really outstanding questions, and we hope to touch on base on everything as much as we possibly can. I will let y'all know for any questions that we don't actually get to in the chat. I do keep track, and we are working on developing future shows from them. But that being said, you know, I think because I know we're going to get into this and we're going to come to the end and go, oh, crap, we're almost out of time. I think this is going to be a great time to take some messages from our sponsors. And we're going to come back and jump right on in to Reiki versus shamanic healing.
Sounds good.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And now for some quick announcements about those outstanding upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Tuesday, March 26th on the Crystal Silence League and Syndication will be the special guest paranormalist Jim Callahan on the subject of spirits. And Tuesday, March 26th on the Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in Syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of druids. And Wednesday, March 27th on the Now You Know Show in Syndication, Professor Porterfield will be the topic of bedtime psalms and silver dimes. And Thursday, March 28th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deborah Voith will be the topic of balancing our elemental energies. And Sunday, March 31st, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man will be Z-Manzilla bringing the Oracle Hour topic of the Pan of Panda I Ching Oracle Deck. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And, you know, folks, that is really a hell of a lineup for the radio shows for the week. So much information is available, and we do this because we love y'all. So definitely tune in, sign in, and take part. We're all here and just willing to and ready to help y'all grow. Really looking forward to these shows. And Z-Manzilla coming back. For those that missed the Sesamero, definitely go back and check it out. I was just I was amazed at how he put that together. So the Pie of Panda I Ching deck. Really curious about this one.
And also that Crystal Silence League syndicated show coming up is with paranormalist Jim Callahan on spirits. That's part two. I missed that part. I missed the part about part two. So if you go and listen to it, you may notice that there are some things that they've already kind of mentioned. So you might want to go back and listen to the first one.
All righty. You know, ready to just dive in to our discussion for tonight. And I noticed right as we were going into our messages, and I'm going to make my attempt to pronounce the name. Is it Tioga V? Am I right?
I think it's Tioga.
Tioga? But she asked, or she mentioned, I am interested in Vision Quest. So, Roy, we already have another shamanic show.
Vision Quest, or that's a whole nother subject by itself.
Oh yes, and Taiga. I was right, Taiga. All right. So anyway, now that we've got that cleared up, why don't you just kick us off today, Roy?
All right. So, yeah, continuing from our last show, I think you said it was November, getting this time more and specifically into the differences between Reiki and a shamanic healing. You know, they're both energy healing modalities. They're both holistic. They work on the physical, the mental, the emotional, the spiritual, but they have different approaches, very different approaches. Many people you're beginning to see people combine the sessions, and I've done some of that myself, but, you know, Reiki is more of a feminine energy. It's nurturing, it's soothing, It's performed by a Reiki practitioner. Most people sleep during a session or fall asleep there somewhere during the session. It's a warmth. It's cozy. You know, it's about balancing your energies. It does a lot of work working with the chakras. Whereas a shamanic healing, that is more of a masculine energy. It's more of a fire energy. It uses tools. It uses spirits. The client is involved more. And when I have clients asking me, you know, well, which one do I choose? You know, how do I want to do this? And you know, what I usually say is, well, if you want to be relaxed, if you want to ease your stress, if you want to be nurtured and pampered, then go with Reiki. If you're ready to jump to the core of your problem, if you want to break down and cry and possibly scream in a session, then if you're ready for that, then let's talk about shamanic healing, because they can be that far apart.
You know, it's really kind of interesting, though, because a lot of people do have, you know, their conceptions or perceptions of the different healing modalities. And, you know, in no small part, pretty much just think, you know, it's interchangeable, that they can do, whether it's quantum touch or, you know, a form of chakra balancing or Reiki or shamanic healing, you know, that these are, it's all the same. And
it is,
you know, while at the base, that end goal of holistic wellness is there, the path to get there can be so drastically different.
Yeah. You know, the goal should always be to get to the core. You know, what is
right.
causing this problem? With Reiki, that's going to be a slower process. You know, it really depends on what you want your approach to be to your healing process. You know, it can take, you know, 3 or 4 or 5, 6 multiple sessions of Reiki to get down to the core of an issue and find it and start that healing process. Many people like doing maintenance with Reiki. You know,
right.
clients, they want to come once a month and just keep their energy balanced and feeling good. And that's a wonderful thing. But that shamanic healing, that's when, you know, people are ready to jump in with both feet and say, let's do this. Let's fight these demons I got going on inside of me. So,
yeah, shamanic healing is definitely no muss, no fuss. We are going to kick that door open.
Exactly.
And expose whatever it is that is causing harm, causing the blockages, causing, you know, whatever kind of maladies the person's experiencing, you know, like, but Reiki is like, it's kind of like, and I don't want this to, I mean, a lot of people are like, ew, onions, but it's kind of, it is kind of like peeling back the layers of an onion, you know, it's
yeah.
very, it has that level of, you know, that delicate nature. It's, you know, It's not going to plow right to the center of it. And, you know, for some, these are important distinctions to really have, to kind of understand before you are booking with a practitioner of either sort. I mean, it's like the difference between going to, you know, I don't know, a boot camp or a spa day.
In some ways. And that doesn't mean every shamanic experience is like that. It's just, it's a matter of, are you willing to go deep quickly? both are a healing experience. The end goal is going to be the same. Although with the shamanic healing, sometimes you add other things. You know, a lot of people that do shamanic healing will actually do, you know, the removing negative entities and things like that. So, I mean, I've done some of that work. I don't particularly care to do it anymore. It's just not my thing anymore. And for a while, that became a heavy part of my practice, and I think I just kind of got burnt out on it. And, you know, and Reiki healing, you know, even I teach my students, you know, never use your energy. Never, ever use your energy. Just be a conduit. Let this universal energy go through you and do its job. That's not true with shamanic healing, though. You are putting your energy into it. You're burning through your own energy, too. So, you know, a heavy shamanic healing can actually make me tired. So that's a huge difference on my end.
I think that's very interesting because, you know, a lot of people, you know, they think of Reiki as the practitioner is the healing. And no, it's very much like a form of mediumship in which, you know, that energy is channeling through the person. They're calling it forth. They are channeling it into the body. It is an important distinction, though, because I have seen, I will say, you know, myself, I am not a shamanic practitioner. Very, very much respect the shamanic practices, very much appreciate the educational moments that I've had with it and the experiences that I've had watching other shamanic practitioners do their thing. But it really is it's a full body, full energy experience. I've seen some very amazing sort of recoveries from things that, you know, maybe the more subtle options weren't able to quite get to the bottom of, or quite able to break through the blockages of the shamanic side of things. It really packs a hell of a punch.
In all energy healing modalities, I mean, we are not actually healers. We don't heal anyone. We present you with the tools and the options to heal. And that's true for Reiki and shamanic healing. I mean, you know, any client has got the option to completely ignore what I say and present to them and go their own way. Or they take the information and, you know, and they run with it. So, you know, I'm not going to heal you. I'm going to give you the tools you need to heal yourself. And we all have to heal ourselves. The thing in Reiki, a lot of the things that I work with clients and with teaching and so forth is, you know, it is a more subtle energy. It's about stored energy. You know, we live our lives in 7-year cycles, and those kind of line up with the chakras themselves. And I don't remember if I hit on this back in November or not. But, you know, your first 7 years of life, those things are going to be stored in your root chakra, you know, and that's about a time of life of being nurtured and loved and taken care of. And, you know, that's how the world should be. But there are those people that's not true, that they weren't taken care of. You know, in the first 2 or 3 years of life, you can't even live without somebody taking care of you.
Right.
But if that didn't happen, then we store this energy within our root chakra that says, I wasn't loved, so I don't know how to love. I don't know how to trust. I got to do everything myself because nobody's going to do anything for me, those kind of things. And Reiki is very good at getting to those. those things build up patterns in our lives, and yes. patterns have triggers. So, you know, that's where a long-term Reiki comes in great. And, you know, and we all have those things. We all have the things that need to be worked on. And Reiki is really good about getting down to those subtle issues and then helping you find your patterns. You know, once you know this, that, hey, this comes from your not being able to trust, capital T, you know, and you know, any time a situation's presented where you're going to have to trust the universe or you're going to have to trust somebody to do their part, that's when you realize, you know, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. So, you know, finding those patterns, finding those triggers, being mindful of your actions, all of that works hand in hand with Reiki. So it's a very effective healing modality in that respect.
Definitely for dissolving those thought forms that plague us through these cycles. And to be honest, I don't remember us going through the 7-year cycles in the last discussion. So that's a very interesting concept that
you want
that,
to brief them
to be sharing.
So the first 7 years, birth to 7 years, is associated with the root chakra. And when we think about the first 7 years of life, think about, you know, before you're born, you know, and this is perfect world stuff. The universe is never perfect. But, you know, before we're even born, we are in a perfect environment, perfect temperature, mom's eating the right food, you know, we're protected, we're warm, we're growing. The world is perfect. And then comes the day that we're born, and, you know, you got bright lights and doctors standing around you and somebody slapping you on the ass and sucking stuff out of your nose, and that your very first experience as a newborn is fear. And the root chakra is dominated by fear. That's what dominates the root chakra. It's a fear of survival. And we all have that. We are designed to survive. And that first 7 years, our parents, guardians, what have you, they're taking care of everything for us. They're deciding what meals we eat. They decide what friends we have. So, you know, that's a time of being nurtured and taken care of and just allowed to live and grow. And when that doesn't happen, you know, it can take many forms. Different people have ways of reacting to different things, but, you know, it becomes a matter of not being able to trust, of always being in survival mode. That flight or fight syndrome is strong in those people. And then the second cycle, 8 to 14 years old, that's associated with that sacral chakra. And the sacral chakra is two main things, or three really. It's about creativity, it's where your identity lives, and it's where relationships live. So, you know, 8 to 14 years old, and that is the biggest 7-year cycle we go through. You know,
especially
you're
when you consider
now.
That's also puberty. That's also the answer to puberty.
7, 8 to 14, that is a huge cycle right there. Things are changing quickly. But, you know, we're in school now and we're making our own friends and we're deciding what clothes we want to wear and what we like and all that. We're creating our identity that's outside of our parents. So that's that first step of creating our own identity. And it's also where relationships form. That's when we first have that, you know, that puppy love. I like you, do you like me? All of those things are going on. And we're creating friendship relationships too. Our parents aren't picking our friends for us. We're making our own. But, you know, that's where the relationships live. So, you know, as an example, if you're between 8 and 14 years old and you're determining what a relationship is, and mommy and daddy get a divorce during that age. Well, what does that do? Well, you have a really warped, you know, definition of what a relationship is. They don't last. People fight. They can't get along. Nobody wants me, you know. So again, that's all held in that sacral chakra. that's going on there. And unfortunately, between 8 and 14 years old is when most kids, especially girls, are sexually abused, if they're going to be abused. So, you know, if you're sexually abused at the same time you're forming your identity, what's that identity going to be? It's going to be a victim. So, you know, we've got that to work on in the sacral chakra.
Right.
And we keep carrying all this stuff forward. We hold this and we carry it forward. And then that third set, which is associated with the solar plexus, then we got to 15 to 21-year-old. And the solar plexus is very outward-facing. That's kind of telling the world who we are, and that's where ego lives and our free will lives. And, you know, during that time, the 15 to 21-year-old, we're becoming an adult. We're deciding what we want to do with our lives. We're picking our track in school. We're picking our college major. We're wanting to get that first job and start a career. It's also where our first real relationship lives. You know, that 16-year-old love that's going to last forever. And, you know, rarely ever does. and if you do marry that high school sweetheart, you stay together forever, probably somebody's actually lying. You know, it hasn't formed well enough yet, you know. So, you know, but in that third 7-year cycle there, it's about becoming an adult and telling the world who you are, and what you want to be and what you want to do. And then if we look back to those first two cycles and we weren't nurtured or we were abused or we had relationship issues, you know, we don't even know what we want to be. We don't even know how to tell the world who we are. We come into that one with a total lack of confidence. We come into that with a whole lot of shyness because everybody out here is doing great and they know they want to be accountants and doctors and all this stuff. And I'm sitting up here going like, my life is so screwed up. I have no idea what I want to be. I just want to get through this day, you know.
Right.
So, you know, that's often misinterpreted as being shy. Well, it isn't really being shy. It's just there's something lacking.
You know, a lot of people really don't, you know, they're not in tune enough with themselves to be able to really kind of break these, you know, break these cycles down. You know, a lot of this is, this is something that I've researched a little bit myself, you know, a little bit for me is typically years, you know, talking about these 7-year cycles and the 7 chakras and such. And it's amazing just how much gets sublimated without anyone even remotely realizing it.
Well, most people don't realize it. You know, it's just, it's their life. You know, this is just the way it is. So, and we're all like that, you know. We all go through that. That forced cycle associated with the heart, the 22 to 28-year-old. Now, at that point was when the heart is fully opening, and the compassion and the ability to love and to love ourselves and love others. You know, we're an adult now, and that's the typical median age there where you actually do meet your spouse.
Right.
You're ready to meet your spouse and then the house and the 2-car garage and the puppy and all that that everyone's wanting. That's all living in that heart cycle. But when you look at that cycle, and if the first 3 were screwed up, you know, you're going to be able to hold on to this job? Are you going to be able to stay in this marriage that you're creating here? Or are you going to be able to nurture these children you're having since you weren't nurtured? I mean, do you know how to do that? So that's all the things you've got going on there with the heart. And plus, in that age range, the 26-year-old. 26-year-olds is the biggest age range for depression. And that is because up until that point, life has been changing really, really fast. The first 26 years, we're changing every year. And then it slows down at 26, and we're just going like, wait, is this it? I'm 26 years old. There's nothing new. There's nothing more going to happen to me. And I mean, even science shows that, you know, some of our brain cells begin to die around 26 and 27 years old. So life really slows down at that point.
Right.
And then that fifth range. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That fifth range associated with the throat chakra, the 29 to 35 year old, you know, that throat's associated with communication. It's associated with truth, our truth. And you're entering that age there where, you know, you want to learn what your truth is. And we all have this inner philosopher that we're born with. And that's the age range where that inner philosopher starts waking up. He's not really doing anything yet, but he's waking up and, you know, he's making us look at our lives like, what do we want to do? You're not ready to make any huge changes yet, but I know I need to find my truth. I know I only want to be around people that speak my truth. You know, we talk about in society, well, in my 20s, I could close the club and be out with all my friends and stay out all night and go to work the next day. But in my 30s, I don't do this anymore. That's not necessarily, you know, an energy and an age thing. That is more of a, we're looking to just be around people that speak our truth and live our truth. So, you know, we're kind of narrowing down who our friends are at that point. And that inner philosopher waking up makes us start questioning a lot of things in our life, you know, maybe some subtle changes, not ready to do anything drastic. Maybe you went to school for accounting and you became a CPA. Well, in your early 30s, you're not ready to quit yet and open a metaphysical store. But maybe you're ready to take your CPA and go work for a nonprofit, you know, make a little difference in the world. So subtle changes. And then the next age range with that brow chakra, the 36 to 42, quite a bit going on there. The philosopher becomes fully awake at that point and starts dominating our lives, making us question everything we've ever done, where we're at today. That's the reason age 42, you know, that midlife crisis happens. That's because that philosopher is fully awake at that point. And really talking to us, saying, what are you doing with your life here? Are you making any difference at all? Kind of thing. And that's also where non-duality kicks in. You know, we start, you know, everything in our world is dualistic, and, black, white, he, him, you know, good,
right,
bad, all of this stuff that we're programmed to in our lives. And during this time when that philosopher wakes is when we begin to question all that stuff, you know. Is there just one of two choices? There's a whole lot of choices. So, you know, we begin to exploring that non-duality that exists that we haven't really looked at before. And then the last one, the 43 to 49 years old, associated with that crown chakra, that is a hard one in this society because the crown chakra is all about connectedness. It's about finding that divine, a divine within you. And in this society, we're programmed that there is no divine within you. So that is a very hard one, especially in the Western world, to deal with. It's the time when we should be awakening, and the majority are not. So they get kind of lost. You know, what's supposed to be happening in life is not happening. And it's because we're not allowing it to happen. And then after at age 50, we kind of start all over. We go back into that root chakra, and we go into it with all the stuff we've learned and all these changes we've made, and we learn how to take care of ourselves and to nurture ourselves and to start life over in a new way. And we will go into a second cycle, that sacral, where we have this new identity, and we're ready to share it with the world. And we just kind of stop there. We ride that sacral chakra then after, you know, we're in our 50s, and we just kind of stay there and ride out the rest of it. That's how it all should work. It's not a perfect world.
This is true.
It's not perfect. Far from it. But that's how the cycles affect our lives. And circling back to the Reiki, you know, this is one of the ways that can really help Reiki practitioners with their clients or themselves realizing, finding these things. Oh, you know, in Reiki, I see you got a lot of root problems here. You know, let's talk about that. Did you have a stable childhood? Do you live in fear every day? All of those things. So, and then we have life that knocks us down. You know, I'll use my mother as an example. You know, she's in her 60s when my dad died. But this sliding scale, this seven-year things we're talking about, that can change at any moment. You know, when my dad died, my mom went right back to that root chakra because my dad always owned his own business, and she rarely worked through the years, and she didn't have to. And you know, it's like, how am I going to survive without him? How am I going to do this? You know, they were old school. Even her name wasn't on the checkbook. It was Mr. or Mrs. Hamilton. Her name wasn't on there. So, you know, and I still remember the day I had to take her to the bank and get new checks printed with her name on it. It was a horrible day for her. So, you know, she had no identity left. She had no survival skills. So, but sadly, when these things happen to us, we don't get to stay there for 7 years again. You know, we got to come on up out of there. And again, that's a good way Reiki can help you with that.
And it does it's a very methodical, very structured, and gentle way.
Yes.
That, you know, it can coax these rather than, you know, the Band-Aid ripping off. It's a way to coax these things out of the past. Deal with them, make peace with them, send them off on their way. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of folks are, in large part, very attracted to Reiki as a healing modality. I'm not sure how many folks actually follow how many of the major hospitals in the United States are now starting to actually have Reiki practitioners on staff.
Absolutely.
To coincide with the allopathic medicine. You know, the big five, the top five hospitals in the United States all have Reiki departments.
Yeah. Vanderbilt right here in Nashville has Reiki now.
Very cool.
Beautiful.
Very cool. Yeah. Cleveland Clinic,
you know,
the Mayo Clinic, Cedars-Sinai. They're all on board.
Right. And all of these things that we're talking about, these life problems and, you know, surrounding the chakras, these create energy imbalances and energy weaknesses. And where that weakness lives opens the door for physical illness, for a physical weakness. So that's what makes this a holistic healing modality, because you know, it's a weakness in the energy that opens the door to a physical problem.
So one of my teachers is always fond of saying disease is actually not the word that we should be using. It's dis-ease.
Dis-ease, yes, hyphenated.
You know, it's that rift that then kind of torn into our energetic fields by these traumas and such, and or these feelings of being neglected and such that we've experienced over the years. You know, I do appreciate the shamanic aspect of the healing process, though. In, you know, it really does kind of bring together more aspects of the individual themselves, in my estimation. And correct me if I'm wrong, because like I said, not a shamanic practitioner, but you know, when, as it involves, you know, ancestor work, it involves, you know, making, you know, bringing in the, some shamanic practitioners bring in, you know, the herbal aspects of it, you know, and kind of just, it's it's that the dynamic aspect of shamanic practitioner or shamanic healing that I think really is it's not understood as well. It hasn't met the mainstream like Reiki has.
And a lot of times, many times, shamanic healing works well with someone who doesn't understand where their energy imbalances are coming from. We tend to block out bad times in our lives, especially kids, when we're young, things we don't remember. We may think, I'm going through a divorce right now, that's where all my problems are coming from. And when we go with a shamanic healing, we may have those spirits or those ancestors coming back at us and saying, no, this isn't about the divorce. This existed long before your divorce. This goes back to when you were 3 years old and this happened and you don't remember it. Or 7 years old and you remember it, but you just don't realize what a huge impact this had on your life. And it doesn't always have to be a bad thing to have a big impact. It can be normal everyday things, but, you know, the little things. If you've ever read the Four Agreements, that he hits on that in there. We make contracts. He uses an example of a little girl that's, little three-year-old that's running around the house singing, and her mother's got a headache and she don't want to hear it. And you're like, well, you shut up with this screaming. And the little girl never sings again. She made a contract with that one simple statement. And when she's 30 years old, she's probably not going to remember that. But when a spouse yells at her one day and says, will you shut up? Boom, total breakdown. And she don't even know why. Because she's holding that contract where her mother said, will you shut up? And that's a good example of healing on the shamanic side, because you got helpers on the other side taking you there today and showing you where the problem is, and this is what we got to work on.
You know, it does kind of bring into that the interplay, I guess you can say, of the healing, you know, the concepts of soul retrieval, the concepts of the journeying,
right?
To kind of, you know, bring these disparate parts back together and put the person, you know, I jokingly say about the, you know, the $1 million man, the $1 million woman. We can put them back together. We have the technology, but you know. It's one way to kind of really envision this process, and I like the fact that how you shared too, how the shamanic is for the less esoterically inclined, you know, if you're ready to handle the experience, definitely jump on board with a shamanic practitioner.
Yes. It's a much different experience. It's not always, you know, soul shattering. I mean, not to put fear in people, but it can be. It can be quite disturbing at times. But, you know, that's a part of healing. So, yeah. You brought up soul fragments. That is a very important part of shamanic healing. When things happen in our lives and they're bad to us, and that's what's important. Not, you know, someone else may say, oh, well, that wasn't no big deal, but if it was a big deal to me, then it's important. We give away a piece of our soul. We take this little wounded piece of us and we set it to the side so we don't have to deal with it anymore. We ignore it, and we put it away, and we think we're okay. The thing is, we can't go through our lives being part of a person, part of a human. If you're never going to be happy if you're never whole. And one thing that you can do with shamanic healing is and, you know, and I'm doing my journey. I go out here and I look for your soul fragments. And, you know, I'm sure different practitioners see different things. They work with us differently. When I'm doing it, I see you. I see my client. One time I may see them as the person that's in front of me today. Another time I may see them as a child or something. But there are going to be many, many fragments out there, not just one. And you just go up and you talk to each one and say, are you ready to come back now? Are you ready to come back now? Are you ready to come back now? Some will be and some will not be. And that's what we work with. We don't ever force it. And then we take those that are ready to come back, and there are different methods of doing it. I have a shaman stone, and I have my little method of gathering up these soul fragments and putting them into my shaman stone and then bringing them back out of the journey with me and reintegrating it with the person, which usually involves putting the stone on the person and blowing it and integrating this back in. But, you know, that is a huge part of healing right there. And it doesn't happen instantly. You know, part of the process happens instantly. And then it happens over time. The integration comes back over time. And as you get more healed, then more of the fragments may be ready to come back. It's not all going to happen in one session.
That's very true. And it's probably for the best that it doesn't all happen in one session.
We can only handle so much.
And, you know, you don't want to create additional trauma while trying to repair other trauma. You know, you don't want it to become like this self-perpetuating sort of a cycle.
But you don't want to, but in all honesty, you don't get to ignore it forever.
This is
and
true.
And you have to deal with it. And when you bring back some soul fragments, there's going to be things there you have to deal with. That's what you say. It does happen over time. It happens slowly. But that's just part of the healing process. But, you know, a typical shamanic healing practice or session is you can be sitting in a chair. You can be laying on a massage table. It really doesn't matter. A lot of people like to do those on the floor and just lay down beside your client, and I've done that too. So you're close and next to each other. You know, then you use your tools, your drumming. You can do drumming to get in that trance state and do a journey. I've always been prone to doing drums, although I find myself recently liking a rattle better. I just, you know, like if something's changing in me, I like the rattle. I can hit the trance state quicker. But you do that lower world journey. You go out looking for the ancestors. You go out looking for their helpers. You're announcing yourself when you're there. Who is here to help me with Sally in her healing session today? And, you know, you never know who you're going to see. It could be part of Sally's soul sitting out there. It could be animal spirits. It could be ancestors. It could be helpers. You know, and it's conversations that go on, and they tell you what's going on with that person and what caused it and what their healing process needs to be. They may suggest other things, you know, changes in diet, using herbs, herbal teas. Those things can come out of those journey conversations. And then you know, you come back and you work with your client on that, and you may even take them on a journey, you know. But my journey, and the first thing is my journey, and it's separate, and the client is there beside me, and taking that spirit, trying to, in a way, take their energy and spirit with me without completely involving them. So I have my process first, and then we have their process second. That's the reason that a shamanic healing session, for me anyway, is much longer than a Reiki session.
Yeah, and you know, while the Reiki session in and of itself isn't as active in as much of, you know, making contact with these pieces and bringing them back together and, you know, discuss this, you know, go find, hunting down these parts of the person that have been, you know, knocked around, kicked aside, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when it comes to doing a Reiki session, there is a similar sort of experience that I know I've had in working on clients where, while it's not so much of bringing these pieces back together, but it's the psychic impressions of what occurred to create the blockages that are being experienced and how to resolve them. It's something that, you know, I know for myself, I have, before we even begin a Reiki session, I ask the person, you know, if and when these sorts of impressions come through, do you want to know? And would you like, you know, to discuss those towards, you know, to work more towards your healing? So it's almost like a subtle aspect of what you had described with the journeying.
Yeah, and, you know, everyone has their own approach to, you know, different practitioners like to do this different ways. When I first started out over 20 years ago doing Reiki, you know, I had these impressions, I had these visions, and I didn't always share them. You know, and that was, you know, just my own lack of confidence happening. These people are going to think I'm nuts, you know, if I say this out loud kind of thing. But then, you know, I quickly reached this point where this is legit. This is what I'm being shown. This is what I see. And I share that at the end of every session, no matter what I see, no matter what I hear, I share it. And I find you just got to be honest about it. You know, and that applies to the shamanic healing too. You've got to go into this with that attitude that you're going to see things, you're going to know things, and you got to be able to share it, whether it makes sense to you or not. You know, because they're, you know, I may interpret a vision differently than you would interpret a vision. You know, I'm seeing it through my filters. So we have to share it and we have to have conversations about it. But I've never had a situation where, you know, someone looked at me and said, no, that never happened. And it could be something they remembered or didn't remember.
Yep, right there with you. I've never had that experience of, no, I don't know what you're talking about. That's not a thing. It's always an, oh, yeah, sort of a moment.
The only one time that it came close to that was I was doing a Reiki session, and there was this older woman, you know, came through, an ancestor and or whatever, and oh my God, she had a foul mouth. She was talking, and I could hear her, and just this foul mouth. But the client I was working with was, you know, these expensive clothes and everything's perfect, and I was just,
posh,
you know, having trouble saying the words the spirit was saying, and I was trying to relay this nicely, and she was just looking at me like, I don't know, this don't make sense. And finally I'm like, okay, well, this is what she said. Boom, you know, these are the words that came out of her mouth, and the woman just died laughing. She said, that's my grandmother. You know, so I should have been honest to begin with.
it's like one of the things when I have a mediumship student, it's, you know, it's not for us. It's you give what you get and let it rest with them. But that's a great example right there. You know, when we try to filter, we're actually depriving the recipient of the information that they need.
We are. And I just don't do that anymore. Here it is.
And when it's part of the healing process, it to me, it almost, it has like an exponential effect, in that it's detriment. But there's actually a question in the, from Hey Maganda. She's asking, you know, that, you know, are these soul retrievals and the healing, the journeys, are these able to be practiced at a distance to receive the benefits?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because it's energy healing. You don't have to be physically there.
And Tiega asks, how do you find a shamanic healer?
Well,
you go to Nashville.
I mean, you can ask around for references. You can Google and look at people. But, you know, really look at their bios. See if it resonates with you. Ask your spirits, ask your guides, you know, whoever it is you talk to lead you to someone. That's what I would recommend. sorry. And, you know, let them guide you on how to find someone.
You know, there are resources that are available to really, and I should say vetted resources, not just to kind of, you know, throw a net out there and have it be one of those, you know, good luck everybody else, or may the odds be ever in your favor sort of things. You know, take a look at places like, well, we'll start right off the top, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. You know, go to readersandrootworkers.org. All of the bios of the members of AIR are there. Obviously,
right.
You know, you can find shamanic practitioners and such. And, you know, all of the members of AIR have, you know, agreed to a code of ethics to be able to provide the highest and best that we can. And if we don't have somebody that we can, that is within the fold, that is somebody that, you know, we can recommend, we will talk to each other. We will ask each other. We will network for you. You can check out places like Lilydale, New York. You know, take a look at their program from the summer sessions. Who's there teaching? Who's there, you know, providing services? There's Camp Chesterfield in Indiana, Camp Canandaigua in Florida, the one in Wisconsin, Camp Wanawak, I want to say it is. If Deb Voice listens to this show, she'll probably laugh at me because I always mispronounce it. but look for these spiritual camps and see who is offering services there. Another great, honestly, and one heck of a resource in the Midwest, Aromagees Botanica and Healing Amulet. Both, you know, have vetted individuals all around the Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio-ish region. There are ways to find people that you can be comfortable with, that you can open up to, and really receive the benefits of the holistic healing practices that they offer.
Yeah, you know, I have people, you know, I get, you know, phone calls or emails or something saying, you know, I looked at your website or whatever, and I've got this person who needs this kind of healing. Can I refer them to you to make an appointment? And my usual reply to that is to just give them my website. Let them go, read the information, look around, see my picture, and see if it resonates with them. Because you want to find someone you're comfortable with.
Right.
And your gut will tell you if you're comfortable working with this person. But also on the other side of that, it is a matter of, you know, each practitioner is different in their practice and how they approach things. And you kind of have to respect that too. If you call me and say, I want to book an appointment for a soul retrieval, I'm going to say no. I won't start there. That's my choice. You know, it's like, let's have a conversation. Let's do a Reiki session or something like that. Or if you call me and say, I got a demon and I want this demon removed, you know, and again, I will say no. You know, let's have a conversation about this. Let's do a tarot reading. Let's do a Reiki session. You know, I'm not going to start at that far end with someone I've never worked with and don't know. So, you know, you have to respect each practitioner's way of doing things.
And that's also a sign of a good practitioner, is where those of us that are not willing to jump in the deep end. You know, we don't, if somebody's willing to go from 0 to 60 in phone call, you might want to, you know, to pump the brakes a little bit before jumping in
right.
a little bit, you know, jumping in and really kind of possibly regretting that later. You know, there's, and that's one thing, like for myself, and I know for Reverend James, for and I'm sure for you too, Roy. You know, we're very much in tune with making sure that, you know, the best services are provided. If we do recommend somebody, it's somebody that we've vetted. It's somebody
oh,
that
yeah,
we can trust and that we would go to ourselves. You know, if you speak to a practitioner, this is one thing that I've held true for many, many, many years now, is if you go to a practitioner and they have nothing good to say about any other practitioners, you might want to hand them their business card back and walk away.
Yeah, that's kind of true. You know, for a long time, I used to have it where you could book shamanic healing with me. And, you know, if you go to my website, you can book a tarot reading. You can book a Reiki session. I think Reiki's not showing right now. I've been kind of taking a little break from that. But I don't have it where you can just book a shamanic healing session with me without us having ever had a conversation. I just think that needs to happen first. We need a good understanding of what's going on and what you need. You know, it's best for you and it's best for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just, you know, people, if when they want to work with me, they have to understand that's the way I do it. So,
you know, and much the same can be said, you know, we've talked about this. I know, you know, in talking with both yourself and others on the show about when you're building your business and everything, you know, is really kind of starting from that conversation. Even like we'll have people that'll come to us for root work and it's like they're ready to rain down hellfire and damnation on somebody that looked at them cross-eyed one day. And it's like, is this justified? you know, that 0 to 60 thing. Make sure that you're having these conversations. You know, for any of you listening, it's an important step to healing. It's an important step to growing.
Right. And is this type of healing what you actually need? You know, I don't want this to be interpreted the wrong way, but if the first words out of your mouth to me, and we've never had a conversation and we don't talk, we've never talked and those kind of things, is you say I have a demon, you know, I'm going to take a couple of steps backwards because there are so many bad things in our lives that can make us feel like we have an attachment and we really don't. So let's do the beginning work and see if it's truly an attachment, because chances are it's not.
Right.
Sometimes we just have so much negativity in our lives. We live within so much negativity. We got so much negativity coming out of us that it takes on its own life that lives outside of us. And we think it's an entity, and it really isn't. It's just a piece of ourselves.
That's always, you know, an intriguing development that comes from, you know, some of these healing practices and such, is when somebody feels that, you know, they, like you said, they have an attachment, that something's riding them, and it turns out to be a part of themselves that they didn't want to recognize or acknowledge or that was more or less trying to fight for some dominance and some recognition because, hey, it wants, you know, that foundational root chakra recognition as well.
Right. I'm only interested in doing the healing practice, the modality that someone really needs. I'm not interested in, you know, I'm not a showman. I'm not going to entertain you by, you know, doing an exorcism and getting rid of a demon when you never had one to begin with.
Right. You know, we are getting kind of close to time here. We got about 12 minutes left, and there's an avenue I kind of wanted to explore a little bit in the comparison between the two practices is the use of tools. Because I know you had talked about the shaman stone. So what would some basic tools be that you would kind of expect from a shamanic healing session?
So, I mean, the basic tools would be a hand drum, doing a drumming session. It could be a rattle. I use both. Doing a rattle to help set the trance mode or to wake up the spirits, so forth. I only use my shaman stone if I'm doing a soul retrieval. She has her own little special velvet box she lives in. I only bring it out when I need it. I guess in a Reiki session, the only thing I ever use is I do like using a sound bowl at the end of a session, you know, to kind of smooth the energy and clearing and so forth. But, a shamanic session with me, there's going to be some kind of tool, probably the rattle going on just about through the whole session. You know, and that's just keeping me in tune with those spirits that are, you know, communicating with me.
So that's one thing.
Might use feathers.
When it comes to Reiki, I've come across practitioners that said if anybody's using a tool that they're not a real Reiki practitioner. And I tend to disagree with that. What's your take on that?
I totally disagree with that. I think we have to, this goes back to a conversation I had with a customer in the store this week. Because I was explaining, she was talking about she's burning her 7-day candle and it kept drowning out, kept going out. And I was explaining to her, you know, sometimes you got to fix it. It just be a bad candle. You can dig out the wax around it, you know, to get it burning good for you. You know, just a pleasant conversation. And she fires back at me, well, I was told you can't do that. You know, it just irritates me when we want to take away someone else's power when make up these rules. And you do see that happening in Reiki these days. You know, there are no rules. There is no governing body, celestial or earthly, over Reiki. And if you work better with a tool, then do it. You know, you have to work with what works for you, and we have to give people the space to do that. Sorry, that was a rant.
No, but it's true, though, because really...
We just want to keep stealing everybody's power.
You know, there are healing modalities. You know, there are crystal healings. There are, you know, people are probably familiar with things like crystal grids and such. You know, these are healing tools as well. These can be put into play with things like Reiki. Reverend Roy talked about using a sound bowl. You know, I've known individuals that will actually put on almost a full, like, singing bowl concert to start or to close a Reiki session.
Yeah.
You know, the use of incense, the use of... I actually have a CD that it's a shamanic drum that I use specifically during my Reiki sessions. And it's just a beat, you know, dun, 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 sort of thing. And it just, you know, it just, it induces that all of these tools do come into play. So I wanted to get that out there a little bit, is don't let anybody say that your Reiki person is not a real Reiki person if they use a crystal or anything else.
You know, each practitioner's got to find their own way to do this, what they enjoy. And you know, when I teach Reiki classes in level one, I spend a little bit of time talking about that. You make the session your own, you know. I'm showing you the basics. You make it your own. You can do Reiki just sitting in a chair in the backyard. Or you can have a massage table in a rented room with all the bells and whistles and the candles and the incense and, you know, the music, the sound bowls and all of that, you know. And I love that experience. The people that do almost a sound bath, like you mentioned, or I would love to have one of those sessions myself right now. But, you know, we have to give people space to do that. And we have to respect those that want to do it. And some clients wouldn't like that. Some want a spa experience. Well, they just need to shop around and find that Reiki person that does it that way.
Very true.
There's plenty of people out there to do it.
You know, and a lot of things, when it comes to the healing process, is most of us do intermingle modalities. Some things are a little bit harder to intermingle. Really kind of depends on, you know, just how in tune the practitioner is with the different tools. But, you know, in a sense, some of these tools do almost, you know, when you incorporate them with Reiki, it almost does kind of give it a bit of a shamanic feeling. But Reiki in and of itself is still very much channeling. It's just being augmented with the tools versus the tools being a part of the process itself.
True. Yes. I see somebody just ask a question. How does this differ from shamanic healing? Is the shamanic healing always guided by the practitioner shaman? And the answer to that is no. Not at least with me. I will start a session with my own journey, and then usually 99% of the time I will take that information and lead my client on the shamanic journey so that they can see and experience some of this stuff themselves. You know, it's like, you know, this guide, this power animal, da-da-da, is waiting here to have a conversation with you. So, no, it's not just me. Shamanic healing is very interactive. I may even guide them on a guided meditation to, you know, if they're up for it, I'll take them on a guided meditation to rise up out of themselves off the massage table and turn over and look at yourself and tell me what you see. Tell me where you see red. Tell me where you see black. You know, every shamanic healing is the same. And to come to me, is different. And to come to me and say, what can I expect? And I'm going to say, I don't know. It's different every time I do it.
You know, that actually brings up a question for me. Is there a moment where during the shamanic healing practice where the client can almost take the lead in a way that while the practitioner is there to kind of guide and ensure, you know, that they don't get lost somewhere in the ether, but more or less where, you know, all of us, where the practitioner can be like riding shotgun and allowing the client to really kind of, I don't want to say run the show, but you see, you kind of understand where I'm going?
Yes, and to me, that is the perfect session. That is absolutely the perfect session. The clients can do that if they have, you know, if they want to, and if they have an ability to do that, if they're good at trancing or meditating or, you know, their vision skills. So, you know, all those things play a factor. It wouldn't work, you know, not every client would want to do that. In answer to this question on here, the distinguishing characteristics, the biggest distinguishing characteristic is Reiki is more subtle. It's more nurturing. It's just pure energy. Shamanic healing is more spirit-driven. Guides, power animals, you know, you're going to that other world to get help in this healing. You don't do that with Reiki. And hopefully your client's willing to go to the other world with you or on their own, which makes it even more effective.
Yeah, to answer the one question in the chat here, every shamanic healing is different than every Reiki healing is different. That there is truth to that, although Reiki
there is
can be a little bit more structured.
True.
And you don't really have that opportunity where, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, because I stumbled on my words a little bit ago, you know, where the student becomes a teacher. That's not typically something that can be experienced in Reiki unless somebody has, you know, honestly become or it had their attunements, you know, they're a Reiki one practitioner. That is, you know, Reiki for yourself, being able to practice on yourself. So if you go to another Reiki practitioner, you might be able to take on a little bit of that healing as well. But it's not typical of Reiki, at least in my experience.
If the goal of the client is a Reiki session and they're just trying to work on stress and anxiety and relax and be in a meditative state for an hour, they're not going to want me playing a hand drum beside their head. You know, they can be very different types of sessions between Reiki and shamanic healing. The experience is totally different.
Wow.
A Reiki session with me is more spa-like, really.
And there's our music. We've done it yet again. That's all the time we have for tonight, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening. Until next time we meet, let's keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Reverend Roy of HealingAmulet.com in Nashville, Tennessee, for joining us this week. We invite you to join us next week when we'll be welcoming a new guest to the studio, Troll Towelhead of SatanService.org, bringing us an engaging and enlightening discussion as we explore the topic Satanism in theory and practice. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystics and Mages and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com and at FolkConjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.org, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics, Mages, Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
And Reverend James says the announcements in record time. You know, here on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, we are honestly thrilled to be able to provide these opportunities to learn and grow. So excited to be bringing our guest on next week and looking forward to learning a whole lot new information.